to all my entreaties, arguments, and persuasions, she would turn a deaf ear. Her mind seemed to gloat only upon the disappointments of those on earth, who sought for her hidden treasure, and her time was spent in mocking their futile search, bewailing her own inability to profit by her wealth, or parading herself to and fro before the eyes of any passerby. The surroundings of this miserable woman seemed to be as sterile and gloomy of aspect as her own soul, a cold, cheerless, and deserted. No blooming flower, no shrub of luxuriant green adorned the scene, barren rocks and stony ground alone met the sight, not even the maligned thistle or thorn bush were here to enliven the scene, and yet this being in her haughtiness of spirit, perceived not the gloom and darkness and dearth. This woman, I seemingly in all but outward appearance anything but a woman, I so haughty, selfish, even vindictive, ere what could she produce sweeter than thorn or thistle? Spirit parents and friends of this unfortunate being gathered around, who would fain have assisted her out of her miserable condition, but she knew them not, and waved them away from her side. First steps toward enlightenment. But this state of things could not continue long, as the constant dropping of water will wear away a stone, so the continued influence of earnest spirits descending upon another will produce its result, and so the influence of these good, beneficent ones began slowly yet surely to produce a softening effect upon this woman's heart. She grew unhappy, restless, the gold and jewels of her former days haunted her, she longed to see them once again. In one of these moods she found herself in the bodily presence of a kinsman, a one poor, but worthy, a whom she had despised as shiftless, because while burdened with an invalid wife, and a family of little ones, he could do nothing more than keep himself and family above want and debt. Thinking deeply of the hiding place of her treasure, and longing to behold it once again, she did not know that the intensity of her desire, and the impression on her soul concerning the place of concealment, communicated itself to the mind, or spirit, of her relative. He was in a partial slumber, it was early morning, just the time and condition favorable for producing spirit impression. Starting from his sleep, he exclaimed to his suffering wife, "I believe I have dreamed out the hiding place of Ansara's money, I believe I can find it, at least, I shall search for it." His companion tried to soothe him into quiet, but all in vain, he could not rest, and shortly left the house, followed by the now anxious and thoroughly alarmed spirit. I need not enter into details. Before nightfall the treasure was found, a banknotes, gold and jewels, a together with a note in the handwriting of the deceased woman, stating that the money should be owned by whoever found it, but the jewels must be returned to the heirs of the family. The only heir to the property was a young lady, a governess in a distant city. Gladly did the fortunate finder communicate with her, and as the jewels were worth fully as much as the money, she was glad to take them, and leave the residue with her relative. Thus were honest hearts made happy, and needy ones provided for. He who found the treasure had been sorely tried, his wife's health had become more precarious than ever, and his family were in need of even the necessities of life, for he had been thrown out of employment, and there was no prospect or hope of better days before him. You may judge of the rejoicing in the poor man's cottage that night. The children were elated, but the invalid's tears flowed freely, as in broken accents she thanked the Father of us all for his tender mercy. Enfranchisement of a spirit. It was this scene that softened the heart of that unhappy spirit, and actually brought tears to her eyes. She had rejoiced at the sight of her treasures again, then grown alarmed as she realized they had forever passed away from her, but when she witnessed the tears, and listened to the thanksgiving of the invalid woman, her own heart melted, and she wept in sympathy. And so one little wayside blossom dared to lift its head above the arid soil, and to shed its fragrance over a bitter life, at the flower of sympathy, which is so near akin to love, that the angels consider them twin lilies blooming from one stem. At this blessed moment, those earnest spirits who had longed for this surrounded the woman, dissipating the shadows with their brilliant presence, and revealing her to herself as she was. Horror, shame, anguish filled her spirit for a time, Remorse for the good she had left undone pierced her through and through, but possessing strength, endurance, and energy, and assisted by her friends, she at length rallied and emerged from her old condition into a brighter one. Her old garments dropped away, and womanly robes of simple fashion clothed her form, which soon rounded out in beauty of expression and symmetrical proportions. She is still growing, seeking to learn more of her new life, and to benefit others, and it is her delight to impress the receivers of her former fortune to expend a part of it for the benefit of others. Thus have the wayside flowers of sympathy, love, benevolence, humility, and peace blossomed out from the defilement of selfishness and pride. Children's Progressive Lyceums. In this chapter, which I have devoted to the recital of scenes and incidents that occur in the spirit land, I must mention something concerning the children's progressive lyceums of that world, which are in session at this hour. I will give a description of that school which daily convenes in the massive temple at Spring Garden City, dedicated to truth and education. In this, as in all of our spirit lyceums, spiritual principles and aspirations are inculcated, and a knowledge of the laws of life instilled into the young minds who throng its spacious halls. In that delightful temple, adorned with the artistic expressions of grace and beauty, where snowy statuary gleam out from nook and corner, displaying the sculptor's skill, marvelous creations of ideality, representing all the grace and loveliness of human conception, where beautiful paintings adorn the crystal walls, scenes of natural beauty, glowing landscapes, gleaming water pictures, representations of calm and peaceful life, which the artist soul has caused to speak a lesson from inert canvas, where the ceiling is carved in delicate forms of beauty, and the open walls invite the perfume of the flower and the balm of the passing breeze, where in truth all the surroundings are calculated to awaken only thoughts of the good, to develop a love of the beautiful in the growing mind, and to cause sensation to glow and blossom under the light of purity semicolon a groups of spirit children meet to learn the lessons of life, develop all the highest, noblest attributes of mind, and to cultivate the strongest, purest health for the outward form. The spirit teachers gather, to give instruction to these young souls, to draw forth the inner powers of the undeveloped minds under their charge, and to inculcate on them the principles of true spirituality, which are love, purity, fidelity to truth, and a sense of justice. And these groups of innocent children, from the prattling babe to the laughing youth or maiden, present a picture at once sublime and inviting. Whether chanting in chorus their beautiful spiritual hymns, which awaken devotion, or delivering in concert their golden chain recitations, which tell of the wisdom and boundless love of our Father, whether relating some simple story of actual experience, or transmitting the grand and soul-inspiring utterances of others, whether exercising the limbs in wing movements, or performing the graceful and strengthening evolutions of the grand triumphal march, in each and all of these they present a picture of youthful beauty and innocence, of developing power and purpose, which strikes the beholder with the conviction that these groups of spirits are yet to wield a mighty power. By and by those young souls will depart to take their places as teachers, guides, and helpers to the needy and lowly of earth, or to the ignorant, darkened minds who enter spirit life covered with the pall of superstition and fear, and to such beings they will prove a light that will brighten the highway to knowledge. Methods of instruction in spirit lyceums. These spirit lyceums are schools of education where thought is developed and love awakened, where beautiful sights and sounds arouse the young spirit into activity, and draw it into a condition of perfect harmony. The lessons are all instructive while entertaining, and are drawn from some natural object of bird or blossom, or taken from some beautiful painting, or group of statuary, which represents the idea to be conveyed to the mind grasping for knowledge. Each child whose musical taste is developing, receives instruction in the laws of harmony and melodious sound. Each child who loves art in its expressive form of painting or sculpture receives lessons from masterminds who delight to guide the awakening talent in its proper direction. All work in concord and all delight to please each other. The rose and the acorn, the sparrow and the bee, the tinkling brook and the mossy stone, all speak a lesson of active, changing life to the child. The stars and the sunbeams breathe a lesson of divine goodness to him, and the spirit of all things is felt as he communes with nature. And thus these children are prepared to go forth from their spirit lyceums, breathing holy inspirations upon the lives of others, gently drawing them upward towards the life that knoweth all, the love that enfoldeth everyone. Oh, ye fathers and mothers, who weep in sorrow today because some darling has been taken from your earthly homes, did you realize how tenderly your loved one is cared for, into what a beautiful school your child has entered, to prepare him or her to become a glorious messenger of life and light and peace to the weary and the sad? You would not mourn, but rather rejoice that you have been permitted to offer up to the service of the Lord such a beautiful and pure missionary of love. These spiritual lyceums, unlike your earthly gatherings of like import, convene daily, and the children and leaders, in constant association with each other, grow so in harmony together in sympathy and love, that they become a perfect whole, each one fitting naturally and beautifully into his or her place, and hence are enabled to perform an unequaled amount of good for humanity. And I have found that to these bands of holy angels, together with the efforts of the red race, our Indian brothers, a belongs the credit of swinging back the pearly gates of immortal life, and setting them forever ajar, for the benefit of those who linger yet in mortal clay. A golden chain recitation. I would like to give you a specimen of the golden chain recitations I listened to at the Lyceum of Spring Garden City. The guardian of the school recited the first line, the teachers of the various groups or classes followed on, in concert, with the second line, then the children of the first group recited the third line, the scholars of the second group the fourth line, and so on, until all had taken part in the exercise and become impressed with its beauty and devotional tendency, when all joined in the recitation of the last four lines. Spirit of life and love, to thee our souls we bring, and lay them on thy fount of truth, our purest offering. Spirit of endless peace, who worketh all things well, to thee our souls' divinest praise in songs of gladness swell. God of the wise and good, who rules by perfect law, thy vast creations show thy power without a single flaw. The storms and tempests sweep impurities away, and after darkness brightly shines the golden light of day. The green fruit and the sour are but unripe and good, and every crude, imperfect life, when rightly understood, will teach the human soul progression's deathless power to beautify the living form with perfect fruit and flower. Father, we bring to thee all that our souls contain of love and reverence and joy, without one touch of pain, and, oh, we ask of thee thy blessing evermore, that we may walk still close to thee, thou whom our souls adore. Chapter 7. How Spirits Work. The work of the Spirit is true labor. It may not be labor of the hands, but it is of the heart. It is the impelling of spiritual force outward from within, directing that force in certain channels, or against special obstacles, in order to accomplish a purpose. Spirit work is always for the attainment of some definite end or object, never for the whiling away of an idle hour, or the performance of some task that is to delight for a brief, fleeting moment. Let me give you an illustration of how spirits work, but this instance is by no means an example of all the methods that spirits take to accomplish their labors. Oh, no, these methods are varied, even as individuals vary in their natures and constitutions. A spirit mother reforms her wayward son. In a certain city of this fair land dwells an individual who is at our present writing universally respected and beloved by all who know him, but such was not always the case. 20 years ago this individual was a young man given to dissipation in its various forms. His mother, then in the body, wept and besought him in vain to abandon his evil course, and turn to a better life. Finally, the mother entered spirit life, and for a time that young man plunged into the wildest of dissipations. In the meantime, the mother, awakened in the spirit world, found that she could return to the side of her son, and to a certain extent exert an influence upon him. She began to follow him wherever he went, steadily bending her willpower upon his mind. Into places of low and evil resort went that spirit mother with her erring son. Scenes that made her soul grow sick within her met her pure vision. Yet she faltered not, her work lay before her, and accomplish it she would, whatsoever obstacles might interpose. It would make an interesting volume to describe the experiences and incidents that befell the spirit. For a time the case seemed hopeless, but still the spirit despaired not. Occasionally thoughts of his mother's teachings, and remembrances of her devotion and love for him, would flit across the mind of the dissolute youth, and for the moment his heart would seem to melt, but the force of habit and association had such a hold upon him that these brief moments of remorse would pass away and seem to leave no trace. But all such experiences do leave their impress upon the spirit for good, and in this instance they afforded means of encouragement and power to the angel mother, whose mission was to accomplish the reformation of the immortal soul of a well-loved son. 3, 5, 8 years passed, the youth, now grown to manhood's estate, but in all appearance a perfect wreck of humanity, drifted away from the home of his boyhood among strangers, homeless and alone. Of course he fell among evil associates, but still memories of long ago, and occasionally remorseful thoughts of his own impure life, continued to haunt him. Still the spirit mother exerted her influence upon him, and it finally became manifest in a singular manner. Groping through the city streets one dark night, he stumbled and fell, striking his head upon the pavement, which caused him to lose consciousness for a few moments, when he beheld the face of that mother gazing upon him with sorrowful eyes. He started up, confused and alarmed, but the ringing pain in his head refused to leave, and he seated himself upon the curbstone, holding his bowed head in his hands. All at once a scene opened before him. He saw his boyhood's home, and his mother standing in the door to meet him as he came from school. He heard her gentle, earnest words, "My son, whatever you do in life, seek to keep a pure heart and a clean hand." That was all. Then a calmness fell upon his spirit, as though the peace of heaven had descended there. He felt an angel's touch upon his aching head, and tears of anguish fell from his tired eyes. In this condition he was found and taken to a hospital, where his wounds were dressed, and he was cared for until he recovered from the blow he had received. In the meantime the spirit mother, who had followed her son, succeeded in influencing one of the physicians in charge of the hospital, in her son's favor, so much so, that he offered to obtain manual employment for him if he would work, which offer was accepted. I cannot go into details, suffice it to say that the hitherto wretched man seemed to have changed his nature completely, and why? Because the mother's influence had gained the ascendancy over him. He worked early and late, at first at rough toil, afterward at more congenial labor. Time passed, he became respectable and manly in appearance, he shunned the haunts of evil and followed the good. Finally, he succeeded in gaining a competence, until now he is beloved and honored by all. And what do you think his present work is? He is the superintendent and guide of a mission for the suppression of crime and the development of good in the street urchins and unfortunate youth of the city. For 10 weary years the spirit mother watched and toiled, but at length she was rewarded, for her son was saved, not only to bless himself and her, but also to bless and strengthen many others. Thus one mother toiled and watched and hoped, for many years, for the reformation and uplifting of a child. This is one way in which spirits work, but not the only one which they have of accomplishing their purpose. Let me relate an instance of spirit work of another kind, and in a different direction from that spoken of above, which will reveal to you how possible it is for your ascended friends to assist you in material ways even though you know it not. A spirit mother relieves an impoverished daughter, a widow, who resided in a neat little cottage with her only child. A young girl of 16 years, maintained herself and daughter by the preparation of certain kinds of fancy work, in the making of which she was highly skilled, and which, being in great demand, yielded her an income sufficient to provide a comfortable living for both. This woman was a good, careful, tender mother, and her daughter was reared to respect herself, her fellows, and her God. But she made one mistake, loving her child as she did, she argued that she could not put her to hard or tedious labor, and, therefore, she left her to her own pleasure, in place of teaching her some good and profitable employment. When the girl was between the years of 16 and 17, the mother suddenly sickened and died, leaving her child without the means of support. For a few weeks after this calamity, the orphan existed as best she could. Being obliged to give up the pretty cottage home, she disposed of a portion of its furniture, and taking an upper room in a lodging house, furnished it with the remainder in a comfortable manner. As long as the money realized from the sale of her mother's effects lasted, our young friend managed very nicely, in spite of the terrible gloom and loneliness that had settled over her spirit, but in a little time this was exhausted, and once stared her in the face. In the meantime, the spirit mother, becoming painfully alive to the condition of her mourning child, sorrowed that she had not given her the means of earning a livelihood, and grew restlessly anxious to care for and assist that lonely one. She could not remain in the spirit world with her dear companions, but constantly returned to her child, who lived alone and friendless on the earth, seeking ever to influence and guide her aright. Finally, as pressing want necessitated the immediate trial of some work, the young girl, in a state bordering upon desperation, decided to attempt to perform a piece of the work which her mother had been wont to do so skillfully and well, whose busy fingers she had watched so many times. Materials being at hand, she collected them together and began her unaccustomed task. Never before had she attempted anything of the kind, and at first she was excited and nervous, but as the fingers flew over the delicate, fairy-like work, she grew more composed and hopeful, until, when her task was finished, she held it up to the light in an ecstasy of admiration, exclaiming in triumph, "Why, it looks almost as good as mother's used to." Again and again did she attempt a piece, and each time her success grew more sure and certain, until, when the curtains of evening fell, quite a little pile of delicately finished work lay before her shining though weary eyes. On the following morning, our friend, after consuming a hasty meal of crackers and water, carried the work she had finished to one of the former patrons of her mother, who examined, bought, and paid for it, furnishing materials for more of the same kind. The girl hastened home to resume her work, and again transpired that strange scene of an inexperienced, unskilled child performing work which required dexterity and practice, without making a single mistake, and so on, from day to day, week to week, until she was no longer inexperienced, but had become skilled in her task, and was enabled to take advantage of it, and thus gain more time for recreation for herself. What was the solution of Theresa to the girl's seeming mystery? Why, merely that the spirit mother, drawn to her child day by day through the intensity of her love and anxiety, impressed that child to attempt the work, and guided her in the performance of it, not by unconsciously entrancing her and doing the labor, in which case she would not be teaching the daughter, but by impressing her how to proceed, guiding her fingers, and directing the work, until at length the daughter needed no teacher, for she had become an adept in the art of labor. And yet another good than the power of earning her own living was received by the maiden, in close communion with her spirit mother. Though she knew it not, she began to lose the sensation of loneliness and gloom, and gradually grew peaceful and calmly happy. Thus was a double good wrought by that spirit mother, whose anxiety for her child's happiness first led her to make the mistake of rearing her in ignorance of manual labor, and afterward caused her to project her influence from the spirit sphere upon the child, thus becoming a teacher, in order to rectify the mistakes of the past. To those interested in this narrative I will say the young girl soon made friends and companions, and she is now living a loving, happy, useful wife and mother. Every spirit who cares more for others than for self, and all spirits will do so in time, he has a work of some kind to perform, a work of uplifting, benefiting, and blessing one or more individuals or spirits or mortals, and he or she will pause not and despair in this labor of love until it is accomplished, and then at its completion the spirit will not lay down its power of work and say, "I have accomplished my labor, I will now rest," but, instead, passes on with a smile to new departments and new scenes of labor. Parents suddenly bereaved. A young and beautiful girl. The pet and pride of fond, indulgent parents, the joy of the household and its only flower, just passing into the budding stage of womanhood, met with an accident. She was out riding with a friend, when the coachman, who was partially intoxicated, lost control of the spirited animal he was driving, and it dashed along the road at headlong speed until brought to a sudden check by rushing against a great rock by the roadside. The carriage was overturned, one of its occupants escaped with but few injuries, as she fell upon her companion, but the other, the young girl of whom I write, was taken up senseless and conveyed to her home, where a medical examination revealed that a fatal injury had been inflicted upon the spine. For nearly 3 weeks the young lady lingered, enduring the most excruciating agony of body, unable to move, while nothing but the administration of an broken barsthetics would give her a moment's ease from pain. At length her exhausted spirit took its flight from the poor broken body, and she was at rest. The parents of this child, whom I shall call Estelle, were in affluent circumstances, cultivated and refined people. The father, however, did not believe in a future life, and his grief at the suffering and death of his only child was almost uncontrollable. The mother, a beautiful little brown-eyed woman, was a member of a Christian church, and while she sorrowed in anguish over the bereavement she had sustained, yet felt as one who has something to look forward to, for she hoped to meet her treasure again in another world. Estelle, who had passed from earthly life and suffering, had been lovingly welcomed, and tenderly cared for by gentle ministering spirits, who bore her to a bright home, where immortal flowers bloomed, and where everything spoke only of beauty and of joy. The sweet spirit was delighted with all she beheld, and for a brief time seemed to bask in the glory of her new surroundings. The father's grief affects the spirit, but soon those around her observed that she ceased to take an interest in them and their work. Her thoughts constantly turned backward to earth and the home of her parents. Shades of sadness lurked in her lovely eyes and clouded her pure face. Soon the cause became apparent. Her father was drifting away from her spirit, and she could not hold him by her love. Her mother's spirit she could meet and soothe and cheer, and so leave a quiet blessing of holy peace with her, that upheld while it strengthened. But the father's spirit was so beclouded and tossed that the spirit child could not find comfort by his side. And no wonder, for as the weeks flew by, the father became still more restless and unhappy. Said he to a clergyman who came to condole with him, "Sir, it is of no use, I cannot believe in your religion. I can find no hope for a future life in its teachings, no assurance that there is a divine creator. Why, sir, did I believe in the existence of a God who permitted that terrible suffering and horrible death to visit my beautiful, innocent child, who never wronged a human being, or did an unkind thing in her life? I would curse him as a fiend, unfit for human companionship, much less for worship." Such talk as this, engendered by morbid, bitter feelings, distressed his gentle wife and tortured the spirit daughter, but what could be done? The man seemed to be fast drifting toward hopeless insanity, and there was no one to give him succor and relief. His friends offered him as consolation words of religious sympathy and exhortation, but these only served to madden him the more, while his poor wife could only clasp her hands and kneel in prayer to him who knoweth the needs of each one, and responds to them as he thinketh best. The spirit seeks to make her presence known. The beautiful spirit Estelle had learned that it was possible for spirits to return to mortals, manifesting their intelligence and demonstrating their identity to their earthly friends, and feeling that nothing but a complete and perfect recognition of her presence would convince her father of her continued existence, and so restore the equipoise of his wavering senses, she set herself to work to prove to him the immortality of the soul. But how was she to begin operations? Her parents never mingled with spiritualists, would not listen to a word in their favor. They were not mediumistic themselves, and their home did not afford suitable conditions for spiritual manifestations of any kind. What was to be done?